In the days and weeks before the 10th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks on America in 2001, we relived that terrible day in images and stories of the countless people who died in the collapse of the Twin Towers in New York, at the Pentagon in Washington, and in a field in Pennsylvania. We heard media around the world describe the heroism of so many first responders, but also bystanders and religious who rushed to the scene to help. We heard of the infinite goodness and, yes, love that was to come out of that great tragedy. We also heard on some channels how Muslims felt their world had changed for the worse after 9/11. Well, perhaps I wasn't watching all of the coverage all of the time, but it seems I missed the stories of unsung heroes who have been trying to right the wrongs of 9/11. I'm sure there were a few that did get told. But that's why, when the American ambassador to the Holy See invited me to listen in on a series of roundtable discussions on 9/11, I eagerly accepted. Ambassador Miguel Diaz had long been cooperating with an Italian community committed to peace building called Rondine, Citadel of Peace, and he had invited Rondine's young people to be the honored guests in the conversations. It seemed to me that the Rondine experiment might offer some solutions to the divisions and hatreds between peoples of different nations, cultures, and faiths that were so dramatically revealed in the attacks of 9/11 and afterwards. The young people at Rondine come from areas of conflict in the Balkans, the Caucasus, the Middle East, and Africa. They live together in community in the medieval village of Rondine in Tuscany. They pursue university or master's degrees at Italian institutions while living and sharing with some who back home would be considered their enemies. Some are Sunni or Shia Muslims, others are Jewish and Christians. Ambassador Diaz opened his home to young people from Bosnia-Herzegovina, Kosovo and Armenia, Russia, Pakistan, Israel, Palestine and Lebanon, just to name a few.
If I had to summarize the day, I would say that clearly this was an opportunity for young men and women to express the fears that were present in the aftermath of 9/11. But it was also an opportunity for us to witness, once again, the resilience of the human spirit, the hopes of young men and women for a different world. And so I think that, it was clearly a day of building bridges, where we had students from all over the world of different faiths, and some were not even believers. But all of them were committed to the goodness of the human family. And so I think I call that a success.
But David Ryder of New York was one of the first people I met there. He and his friend Aaron were two of several seminarians from the North American College here in Rome who were invited to tell the young people how 9/11 impacted their lives.
I was in New York. I was in high school at the time. I wasn't directly affected by means of having anybody I knew die, but certainly had plenty of friends who lost their family members. And I probably the biggest impression that was made on me by that moment was the witness of a great priest we have in New York, Father Michael Judge, who was a regular Franciscan. And, he was there, and he was trying to take care of people, minister to them. And the story is, we all know that the building collapsed on him while he was in there. It's alleged that he was giving last rites to someone as the building collapsed on him, which is really a beautiful way to die for a priest, to be giving that sacrament of healing to someone as you lose your life. And I had the chance to go to his funeral. The Clintons were there. There were lots of people lining the street, and the bagpipers. It was just a couple days after 9/11. And I can't say that it inspired me to be a priest, but very much left an impression for me of a priest living very heroically and really living out the call to be a shepherd who lays down his life for his flock.
That's quite a story. What about you?
So
what's your name?
My name is Aaron Qureshi. I'm from the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. I was in Washington on 9/11, and I think it's hard maybe for people who weren't either in Washington or New York to understand the fear that really gripped us in the days immediately after these attacks. Remember, none of us knew. Were more attacks coming? Were there more bombs? Was there going to be more destruction? Were we going to die? And so there's kind of an existential crisis, I think, that each of us faced. And I remember maybe a week or two after 9/11, as I'd kind of been thinking about all the events of that day, I remember just walking along one day. I was 26 years old, and it just suddenly struck me that if today was the day I was going to die, I was okay with that. I had God had given me a great life, and if this was the time, then it's time. That was the first time I'd ever really seriously thought about my own death and really faced that existential question. I think the fruit of that reflection came to fruition later in my own call to seminary and, God willing, to priesthood.
As for David and Aaron, I think 9/11 profoundly changed most of us. It showed us how fragile life truly is, here one minute, gone the next. How dear and irreplaceable are those whom we love, infinitely more precious than money, things, or power. The Lebanese girl who sat at my table certainly felt this way. She didn't want me to tell you her real name because among her friends living at Rondine is an Israeli young man. Technically, their countries are at war, and she might be suspected of being a spy. So I'll call her Myrna. Myrna told us that for her, nothing was ever to be the same after that September 11th, 2001.
I got definitely, like everyone, really shocked, really sad from the dramatic attack, because it's something unhuman. It's something that touched every one of us in every aspect. It made us understand that we have to be more careful, to give more attention of the people around us, the people we care about. So it was quite a shock, and we saw that everything can happen very quickly, and we lose everything really easily.
In just a matter of a few moments, yes. And you, coming from Lebanon, it's a country where we've seen so much of these of lesser scale terrorist attacks, but that happened so frequently there.
So this is what gives us more hope, because we're living in this kind of life every day. So we haven't really have this peace around us. So this is why I think everyone young is seeking for peace, so we can enjoy it and live with it, because we're tired of being always attentioned and afraid and living every day as if it's the last one. So that's why we're seeking for peace mainly.
As I was listening to Myrna, I thought of the huge bomb blast in Beirut on Valentine's Day 2005 that killed Lebanon's former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri and some dozen others, a murder that eventually led to mass protests and the withdrawal of Syrian troops from the country. And other images of car bombs targeting politicians, journalists, the mortar-ridden, burnt-out buildings of what was once the Switzerland of the Middle East. After a 17-year-old civil war officially ended in 1990 and a devastating war with Israel in 2006, Lebanon still has a long way to go for peace. You were telling us that your mom called you. You were preparing to go out with friends to celebrate your birthday, and she called you. And what was that conversation like?
I wasn't aware of what's happening that day. I was only 15. I wasn't really attentioned, and I got a call to come back home, because in the U.S. something happened, and I didn't really understand what is the point in Lebanon. We're in Lebanon. How come if something happened in the U.S., we have to be scared? And I think this is where everyone understood that what's happening in the U.S. is affecting all over, and as in Lebanon, we really get attention because we have Muslims in Lebanon, and it could also be a reaction to get back to us or anything. So we were really careful in Lebanon. We really were afraid of what's happening next, and we didn't know what can happen. So that's it.
You mean you were afraid of that the U.S. would retaliate against Muslims in Lebanon?
Yeah, the U.S. or any other link to the U.S. also.
Some people I heard today were saying that 9/11 was, in a sense, a wake-up call for Americans that these sort of things are happening in other countries throughout the world, and, you know, it's not just America that is suffering.
That was, as you said, it was a wake-up call because they were living in this country that is very far from all the other realities, so they saw that what happened to them is probably happening outside of America, and they made them realize that outside, what happened to them in one day, it's also happening outside for many days and many years. So I really hope, other than being only a wake-up call, I hope they will react upon it after 10 years, hopefully.
But in what way?
In a peaceful way, like accepting everything around us, accepting the difference... nationality, accepting every kind of religion, every kind of ethnicities.
While Mirna is hopeful that man will ultimately choose man's humanity to man as a response to all of this horror, she is pessimistic about the role religion can play in promoting peace. And I wonder, what happened to Pope John Paul II's words, pointing to Lebanon as a model of peace and coexistence between faiths?
As I believe, I think that religion is very important for everyone's life, but I really do believe that everyone should keep his religion for himself and accept the other person as he is, for what he is, not for his religion or his nationality. So I think that any kind of conversation should be beyond religion and beyond nationality and just as a human being. So I think that's a very important point for every kind of young people to follow, to be on this same road so we can have a better place to live in.
You come from a very interesting reality where you have Muslims and Christians, you have 17 different religious confessions in Lebanon. Do you see in your own country that religious leaders are not capable of creating unity?
We've been living like this for, as I remember, forever, and I think it's because of the difference, this power that is held by the religion. So I think and I believe that if it's not powered by the religion, it will be much, much easier.
You were making a comparison with France.
Exactly, because there you can just, they had this ideology that everyone is the person he is, to remove every kind of symbol that you can understand from where he is and which culture, which will make it easier to communicate with people, because there are people who get shocked when they see a certain symbol or a certain...
So someone wearing a cross or someone wearing a veil.
It might put the person in front of him in a bad situation.
Yeah, that in a certain sense is sad, because it is an expression of your faith, and it would be a sad statement for today's society if we were not able to express ourselves freely.
That's true, but that's the reality of what's happening now. Everyone wanna... We can be really utopic and say that everything is fine and we can express ourselves really easily, but at the end, nowadays, it's becoming even more difficult. So it's a sad reality, but I see it like this. I see it that every one of us is a human being, no matter what he is, and that will make it easier to communicate with people if you see it as a person, not as a country or as a religion, if you see the person as a person.
Would you say that this experience with the Rondine community has changed you? Are you a different person? Are you going back to Lebanon a different person?
Definitely. Actually, my whole ideas, I got them from Rondine, because before getting here, I had a lot of prejudice, and I had this image that, for example, we cannot talk to Jew because they are bad, we cannot talk to Muslim because they have another idea, they're different than us. But in London, with all those different culture and nationality we have, it makes it easier to live here. It makes us accept the other, talk with them with any kind of conversation, so we can really live everyone beyond all religion and nationalities.
Also at my table was a young Bosnian woman, whom I'll call V. She told us her father died during the 1990s Bosnian War. And while her mother remains terribly bitter to this very day, V wants to get on with her life and refuses to live it in fear or in hatred. She held up the example of a Palestinian girl at Rondine who cried when her Jewish friend returned to Israel. "That's who I want to be," she was saying. "Not like so many of the other young people today in Bosnia who, like my mother, are resentful and angry." A young Pakistani Muslim said he was shocked by the 9/11 attacks and had desperately hoped fellow Muslims were not to blame. And again he pointed to the Rondine home, where he said enemies can come together and share their pain and become friends. "Every religion," he said, "features peace, and their leaders should be teaching it." Guy Frischmann was studying political science at the University of Florence while living at Rondine. He's an Israeli who told me Rondine means swallows in Italian.
But it's actually the name of the village as it was found. The story is that it was found about in the 70s by a group of Catholic activists, which just found this place. It was destroyed and abandoned, one of the old agricultural villages that were abandoned after the Second World War. And they decided to adopt it. The church actually gave them the rights to go and to use the property there and to restore it. And slowly they were doing all sorts of activities until in the late 90s, they came up with this idea to start bringing students from conflict countries to live together and to study together.
What was the first impact for you as, I imagine, a Jewish fellow from Israel, probably finding himself amidst a lot of Arabs and perhaps even Palestinians? What was that like?
Well, it was very interesting, shocking and difficult sometimes, because you get to meet people who have a very different paradigm than your own, and you learn new points of view. But it's so it's a process. The beginning is a little bit difficult, but then slowly you start getting to know the people and you stop looking at them as nationalities and as labels: Arab, Jewish, Israeli, Lebanese, Palestinian. You start seeing them as people.
Is that something that you might be bringing back with you, that lesson learned when you go back home?
Well, I think that's the point, basically, of what we're doing, because it starts with us, but then we have family visiting us and we have friends visiting us, so the circle expands. Immediately, once you have this link, then somebody's brother or sister comes, so that person is automatically inserted into the friendly energy that we have, and immediately he doesn't look at me with suspicion, maybe in the first few minutes, but then he is more eased into the situation. So that's also the idea, because for me that is the basis of the conflict. Now, it's not a conflict about territory or about religion or about nationality. It's about the understanding that we can live together as human beings and that we need to identify each other as human beings. And friendship is the key to that.
Now, here at this particular meeting, people are going to be talking about 9/11 and the impact it had on their lives, the lives of their communities. And where can you go from here? I mean, how can we use religion as a force for good and not as a means of conflict?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think, first of all, the approach of using the Memorial Day for 9/11 to hold a round table conferences that are in substance interreligious and international dialogue is the key to the solution, because 9/11, other than the specific tragedy in America, is something that symbolizes war and bloodshed going on all around the world these days. So, and we have to do our peace work, not separated from these subjects, but intertwined with these subjects, with these difficulties, because otherwise we're living in Tuscany and in the beautiful countryside, and we're completely detached from reality. So the point is to talk about these situations, to understand these situations from different points of view, and to understand how every one of us in his individual life, in his career, in his future can contribute to a positive change in the situation.
How old were you when 9/11 occurred?
I was 16 years old.
And where were you living in Israel at the time?
Yeah, I was in Tel Aviv. I was on the way to a meeting of my youth group, and I was on the bus, and we heard that a airplane hit the World Trade Center. And I have to say that my first reaction was actually laughter. Just because it was impossible to believe. After that, the shock came in, and we started understanding. But the first reaction was like, "This can't be true. Where's Arnold Schwarzenegger that's going to come and shoot the aliens and save the world?" Because it was just out of a movie. It was so shocking that there was no other thing to do. Like, it was just like a movie.
But to you, as an Israeli, it must have had, you know, a powerful impact as well.
Well, of course, if we think about the context of the time, 2001, in Israel, we were in the midst of the Second Intifada. So these were times of very, very harsh terrorist attacks in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv on buses and discotheques and pizzerias. So it was something that the Israeli people could relate to very strongly, to the feeling of impotence and of fear that accompanies such a trauma.
And what sort of message are you going to be taking back to your friends and family in Israel? You said some people have been visiting you here, but now that you've had this experience, you've met Palestinians and Arabs and people from all over the world here and shared your feelings and experiences with them. What are you going to bring back with you?
Well, my message may sound like a banality because it sort of is really used a lot and without even thinking about it. But my message is the one of humanity, and that in the end, I sat with my enemy in brackets, and I saw that this enemy is moved by the same energies that I'm moved by the same patriotism and love for my country and love for my people and hope to build a better future of prosperity and of peace. So once I've seen that the other side is moved by the same energies that I am, and that he's not a monster, he's not a fundamentalist religious person, although there are fundamentalist religious people who are uncompromising and don't want to hear other points of view. On all sides, it's not something that has to do just with Islam, with Judaism, or Christianity, and all ideologies and all groups. You have people like that. The idea is through nonviolent action, through humanizing action, to go and to meet the other person and to make a friend out of an enemy, which it sounds like a banality, but this is what we need to do. I think that if we want to talk politically specifically about the solution to the Israeli-Palestinian, Israeli-Arab crisis, I don't think that banging the leaders' heads together is going to bring us anywhere. I think the work has to be grassroots work that is going to bring the people closer, that's going to create community between Israelis and Palestinians.
At the end of the roundtable conversations, I am humbled by what I've seen and heard, and wonder if world leaders would be put to shame by the openness, simplicity, and honesty of these young people in their response to war and violence. I ask Ambassador Diaz if Rondine is a model to be multiplied.
And somehow also the experience of suffering that many of these young men and women have binds them together and then enables them to show some kind of empathy and to identify with others who have suffered. And so I'm not surprised that these young men and women have so much empathy for those who suffered. the terrible tragedy of 9/11. And so, again, I think it's, as you said, this is a wonderful model and worthy of imitation. As for what I would like to see from here, you know, it's I would like to see efforts like this multiply. I would like to see conversations and words turn into actions. And so what I like to do is to continue this project that has been that has started and see where it goes. And I think that if we continue to one person at a time, one table at a time, we had five tables of students, if we continue to build on this energy and if we continue to build on the ideas, we can change different communities around the world, because these young men and women represent, you know, someone said you have gathered the United Nations there, a little United Nations. And so I think if we can continue to tap into you know, young men and women like the ones we had here today, we could make a little difference in the world around us.
And a warm thanks there to the American ambassador to the Holy See, Miguel Diaz, and to all of my other guests on this program.